As we sit, let us pray. May the words of my mouth and the thoughts of all our hearts be now and always acceptable in your sight, dear Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. I wonder if you have a favourite magazine that you like to read. I guess these days with the internet, probably we don't read many magazines, but I do have a favourite magazine and it comes out once a year. I wonder if anybody can guess what it is. No. It's published by a Sunday newspaper. That's right. It's the Sunday Times Rich List, 2018. And it was published 2 weeks ago. And it lists in order the 1,000 people in the UK who are the richest, in order starting with the person with most money. Does anybody know who number one is? No, sorry. It's this man. His name is Jim Ratcliffe. I'd never heard of him, actually. But he's got a wealth of £21.05 billion. Can you imagine that? He was raised on a council estate in Greater Manchester, fired from his first job after 3 days, and it's taken him just 20 years to amass that amount of wealth. We had the royal wedding just over a week ago. Can you imagine how much that must have cost? Millions of pounds, with the royal family footing a lot of that bill. The Queen, in fact, is only number 344 on the list, with a wealth of 370 million. And the person at the bottom, number 1,000, has only 115 million. Not very much at all, really, is it? The wealth on this list includes not only wealth in money terms, but it can ultimately be translated into money as far as assets are concerned. The Sunday Times Rich List, the people with the most wealth in the UK. Wealth in the world's eyes. Today we are continuing our series on money matters. And it's been said previously, it's not an easy subject to talk about in church. A study carried out by the Roundtree organisation in the UK showed that 95% of people found it offensive to talk about money. To be asked how they spent their money, or to have suggested how they might spend their money. But it's such an important subject, isn't it? There's more than 2,350 verses in the Bible on money, wealth, and possessions. Jesus spoke about money more than he spoke about sex or heaven or hell. About 50% of the stories that Jesus told were about money and possessions. Roughly 15% of his preaching and 16 out of 38 parables were on money. It was his most talked about topic. All the time we're bombarded, aren't we, with adverts, things people say, the values that people hold, all telling us how we should spend our money and view our possessions. Money is intertwined with every aspect of our lives. It affects our decisions on a daily basis. It affects our relationships. It affects our lifestyle. Our attitudes towards money tells of our unspoken passions, our priorities, our hopes, and our fears. It even reveals where our heart is and who or what we love. One of the key questions in life we have to answer is, what are we going to do with the assets, the skills, the gifts, the money that have been entrusted to us for a relatively short period of time? This morning we're going to look at that well-known passage in Matthew 6 that was just read to us, which forms part of the Sermon on the Mount. And Jesus gave this message to his believers. You may like to turn to it, Matthew chapter 6, verses 19 to 24, which is on page 971 in the Church Bibles. Verse 19, do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth. What do you think about when you hear the word treasure, or as some versions of the Bible put it, riches? Perhaps you think of an old oak chest full of money, or perhaps this, a large French chateau. Or what about this, a Rolls-Royce car, or maybe even this, the latest iPhone. In the context here, I think Jesus is not simply referring to money, but other possessions as well, to assets, to material things. So it could be all of these and more. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth. Do not store up. Other versions of the Bible say, do not lay up or do not hoard. And that word hoard resonates a bit with me because I don't like disposing of anything or throwing anything away. I'm a person who likes to hoard things and hang on to things. I wonder if anybody knows who this man is. Maybe not. Vicky does. His name is Drew Pritchard and he runs a decorative salvage business in North Wales. And there's a series on TV about him. And he goes all over the country to various antique shops. He goes to schools. He goes to big places where they sell and antiques. He goes to stately homes and even churches. And anywhere where he thinks he will be able to find and buy something old and interesting to renovate and sell on. Most of the stately homes he visits are privately owned, some with 80 or more bedrooms, full of valuable antique furniture. And the owners normally take Drew to their outbuildings and their cellars and their stables. And there's stuff there that's been hoarded for years and years. In many cases, it looks just like a load of junk. And Drew will find something there he takes his fancy to, and he will make an offer for it. And it's surprising, these very, very wealthy people who own these big houses, very rich people, they haggle over these things that are really just a load of junk. They don't need this stuff, and they haggle over the price, sometimes for as little as £10. In the Bible, James warns about the dangers of hoarding. Speaking to rich people, he says, "You have hoarded wealth in the last days. You have lived on earth in luxury and self-indulgence." We are told not to hold, be it money or possessions. Do not store up for yourselves treasure on earth, where moth and rust destroy. Everything that I own will one day be discarded. Everything we own will ultimately one day rot. When I was young, sometimes people had clothes that they would only wear very occasionally, for perhaps weddings or funerals. And in between, they would be packed away in a dark, sometimes damp cupboard. And you could tell that someone was wearing their special clothes because you could smell mothballs, a very pungent smell. And the mothballs were, of course, to try to stop and to stop the moths eating the clothes and destroying them. That had been put away and not used. That had been stored, sometimes for a long time. What about rust? We all know that rust destroys. It used to be particularly evident in cars, didn't it? Rust would start to appear on the body of the car, and then eventually it would eat away to the main structure. And what happens eventually to all those expensive cars we see on our roads? Why this? Next slide, Chris. That's what happens to cars eventually. Now, you may be thinking to yourself, well, this passage is about treasure, and that includes gold and silver, and gold doesn't rust. In my pocket here, I've got a small piece of gold, which I bought in Switzerland quite a few years ago. In case you can't see that, there's a picture of gold here. This is a small piece, and it weighs only 2.5 grams. Now, it doesn't show any signs of corrosion or rust. We all know that gold doesn't rust. The point is that riches are uncertain. The money market fluctuates from hour to hour, as does the stock market. And gold can lose its value as well as go up. If it's stored and not used, it could end up being worth less than it was when it was bought. What about the other translation, where moth and vermin destroy? In my garden, I have an outbuilding, which was originally a stable. And you can imagine it's a good place to store and hoard things. And a few years ago, one of these got in. Perhaps some of you have had a squirrel in your loft, and you will know what I'm talking about. These squirrels were a big problem, because they gnawed at all the stuff I had hoarded in my outbuilding. They even chewed through the electrical cables. And many of these items that were stored were ruined and had to be thrown away. Moth and rust, moth and vermin, destroy. And where thieves break in and steal. Well, these days, there's good precautions, aren't there, to stop people breaking into our houses. Very sophisticated systems. But even the precautions that are taken are not 100% secure. You will probably remember this in 2015, known as the Hatton Garden job. The Hatton Garden Safe Deposit Company was burgled by thieves, boring through a thick concrete vault wall and stealing about £200 million. Those who had their valuables, their treasures, stored in those deposit boxes would never have imagined that thieves would break in and steal from anywhere as secure as that. And of course, these days, there's also cybercrime to contend with. Nothing is absolutely safe. And even if our money and possessions do survive our lifetime, what will happen then? We can think of the pharaohs who thought they could take their treasure with them when they died. But it still remains there 3,000 years later. So does this mean then that we're not to store things up? Does this mean we can't save? Well, no. In fact, the Bible encourages us to save. It's okay to save for a holiday or unexpected demand. It's okay to save for the long term as well. Proverbs 13:22 says, a good person leaves an inheritance for their children's children. The parable of the talents in Matthew says, you should have put money on deposit with the bankers so that when I returned, I would have received it back with interest. The message is it's okay to save money, but don't hoard it. Hoarding is saving for no purpose. You may be thinking, all this talk about hoarding doesn't apply to me because I'm not very well off compared to many people. But of course, in global terms, we are all very rich. Apart from the Sunday Times rich list, there is another list called the global rich list. And I think we've shown this in church before. And you can put your net income in the website, and it tells you where you are in terms of richness globally. I tried this last week, and I'm in the top 0.33% of richest people in the world by income. Could you imagine that? Globally speaking, we're all pretty much well amongst the richest in the world. A report by Oxfam in January this year said just 42 people in the world hold combined the same wealth as the poorest half of the world's population of 3.7 billion people. These extremes of wealth and poverty is one of the scandals in our modern world today. Now, at this point, it's worth saying it's not wrong to have wealth. In the Old Testament, wealth is sometimes seen as a sign of blessing. In the law of Moses, specific rules are laid down for getting and securing wealth. Abraham was a wealthy man, yet he walked with God and was greatly used by God. In the Gospels, there were a number of people who were wealthy. Zacchaeus was a wealthy man. In several of his parables, Jesus indicated his respect for personal wealth. So Jesus is not saying that all our possessions are bad and evil and terrible. We are to enjoy the good things he has given us. He's not saying it's a bad thing to be wealthy. It's not a bad thing to have possessions. The point is when they are unused and idle, they start rotting. There are so many in our world today who are struggling to survive, and the Bible is concerned with the sometimes selfishness of the rich. But it can be different. A few years ago, I was a trustee of the International Intercontinental Church Society. And ICS used to invest some of its assets with a small company called Ruffer Investments. And I used to attend the finance meetings with Jonathan Ruffer at his Mayfair office. And in this year's Sunday Times Rich List, Jonathan is there as the 301st richest person in the UK. Wealthier, in fact, than the Queen. He's been described by the Financial Times as a committed evangelical Christian. The rich list information on him says he's a devout Christian. And Jonathan is also named as sixth in the Sunday Times giving list, ranked by proportion of wealth giving, and last year gave away £57.1 million. This very wealthy Christian investor said this about money. There are only three things you can do with it. Spend it, save it, or give it away. What a lot of money does is poison you. It's like the digestive system. It's meant to flow through you, not stop flowing. The disgrace comes when you see it as your own. Do not store up treasures on earth, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moth and rust do not destroy, and where thieves do not break in and steal. So Jesus says, store up treasure in heaven. There's no inflation there. There's no depreciation. There are no thieves. There are no moths. There's no economic collapse. The bank of heaven is secured by the presence and power of God himself. It's proved by the resurrection of Jesus. For verse 21, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Heart here refers to all of our being. The heart in the Bible refers to every part of us. It includes our emotions, our will, our soul, our whole self. Treasure in heaven is our relationship with God, pleasing God, the creator of the universe. So says Jesus, where is our treasure? Where your treasure is, there your heart will be. We are to pursue this intimate personal relationship with the living God. This should be our focus. Where then is our treasure? Secondly, God will give us eyes to see need. Verse 22, the eye is the lamp of the body. If your eyes are good, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eyes are bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? What do these verses have to do with money? What are these verses saying? It sounds quite complicated. Do I have a problem seeing? Do I need spectacles? God's word often uses the eye to represent the attitude of the mind. I believe here Jesus is talking about the spiritual eye, not the human eye. Materialism can blind us spiritually. If our aim is only to get material gain, it will mean darkness within. It's easy to be blinded by selfishness without realizing. The preacher William Taylor likens the eye to a window in the house that allows light to come in what would otherwise be a dark place. Our eyes metaphorically operate as a window, allowing light to shine into our lives. Timothy Keller, the American theologian, said this when speaking about greed. People don't consider greed applies to them. Why, it only applies to rich people. Only people who are extravagant with money. But it can distort the way we see things and leave us in darkness. It's been said that money is the currency of significance. If you live in a certain place, eat in certain restaurants, move in certain circles, even dress in a certain way, these things can make us feel that we are above others. Timothy Keller goes on to say, greed has the power to keep you from asking questions. How you make your money? And how do you spend your money? How do we spend our money? How much do we keep? How much do we give away? In Luke chapter 12, Jesus said, watch out, be on your guard against all types of greed. Watch out is a cry to warn us of danger. Materialism, greed, or selfishness can prevent us seeing and responding to the needs around us. It's like having the curtains closed. But if your eyes are good, your whole body will be full of light. If we are not focused on money and material things, we will be able to see clearly the needs around us and respond in generous giving. And God will show us who we should give to and how much. Giving can take many forms. Giving to St. Mark's or the church we're a member of, to family, to friends, to the needy in the UK and overseas, and the many relief operations such as Tear Fund. Those to whom God directs us to, how much to give and who to give to, be it in money or other ways. I can remember when there was the big tsunami in Boxing Day in 2004, and there were many appeals and donations went out. And I decided I would give something. And I wasn't sure how much to give. So in the end, I thought, I'll give £25. And I went online to the donation site, and I put my debit card details in, and then I hit send, and nothing happened. And I waited, and still nothing happened, so I did what you should never do, and I hit the send button a second time. A few days later, when I checked my bank account, I noticed that £25 had been taken out twice. Now, perhaps that was simply an error, or was it God's intervention, perhaps prompting me that I should have given £50 in the first place, and I wasn't really listening? Even if we don't have much money, we can give a little. It's been said that if you don't give when you are poor, you'll never give when you are rich. J.D. Rockefeller, the American oil industry magnate, said he would never have given out of his first $1 million if he hadn't given out of his first paycheck. We can give our gifts and talents too. We can give our time doing things voluntarily for the church. There's a saying, isn't there, that time is money. Jesus said there's joy in giving. It's more blessed to give than receive. We should recognize that everything we have comes from God and belongs to Him. We are simply stewards, managers of the things God has given to us. The matter of your giving is between you and God. He always takes into account our circumstances. The important thing is we see it as a privilege and not a burden. It should not be out of a sense of duty, but out of love for the Lord and His desire to see His kingdom advanced. God will give us eyes to see need. And thirdly, we cannot serve two masters. No one can serve two masters. Either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. Choose your employer carefully, says Jesus. In place of money, some versions say mammon. And the dictionary definition of mammon is the force that makes people try to become as rich as possible in the belief that it is the most important thing in life. And it can be possessions as well as money. Mammon is sometimes shown pictorially like this. Not a very nice picture, is it? Who do you serve, God or mammon? The right answer is obvious, but what do we do in practice is not so easy. No one can serve two masters. The idea here is of slavery. The word for a master is that of an owner, so not like a modern employer. A slave was actually owned by the master, and the master had total control over his slave. It was impossible for the slave to serve two masters. Jesus says, you cannot serve God and mammon, God and money. John Stott has written as follows on this issue. Some people assure us that it is perfectly possible to serve two masters simultaneously. For example, they manage it very nicely themselves. Several possible arrangements and adjustments appeal to them. Either they serve God on Sundays and mammon on weekdays, or God with their lips and mammon with their hearts, or God in appearance and mammon in reality, or God with half their being and mammon with the other half. It's a popular compromise solution which Jesus declares to be impossible. God can only be served with an entire and exclusive devotion. To try to share him with other loyalties is to have opted for idolatry. Some very challenging words. Who is our master? Which master do we choose to serve? Who then is the Christian master? He is our creator. He gives us the gift of life. He is our redeemer. Jesus paid the price for us. Jesus lost all his treasure so we could be his treasure. Three key points then from the Sermon on the Mount. Where is our treasure? In earth or in heaven? God will give us eyes to see need and respond generously. We cannot serve two masters, God and money. Perhaps one day someone here may end up on the Sunday Times rich list, blessed by God. You never know. But for those who love and know Jesus, we are promised something far greater. To be on God's rich list, and know the experience of the immeasurable riches of his grace in this life and forever. God's riches at Christ's expense. Amen.
Good morning. You know that moment when you think you should have prepared a little bit more before the sermon? Good morning, everybody. My name is Luke. I've been asked to give a little summary of our finances at church and what's going on and other things. And obviously, Glyn's been talking about that the last few weeks, so I was asked to do it to just change the face of her who was delivering the message. But also, I'm going to do it in a slightly different way because... It can be a little dry subject, so I've tried to create some humour and do something different, so we're going to talk about it in a slightly different way. So, who here likes to play Monopoly? Yes? Now, how many different versions are there out there now? Loads. So I was looking through my house the other day. We've got two versions, none of them are the original. We've got Star Wars, in fact, we've got two Star Wars versions for some reason, different episodes. There's like Lord of the Rings, there's New York, all these other things. So I thought I'm going to invent a new version, and I decided to call our version Churchopoly. So we're going to play Churchopoly this morning. So let's go. So how do you play Churchopoly? There are three things that we need. So the first one is we're going to need to choose a character to move around the board. The second thing we're going to need is we need to collect from the banker our starting income before we start our Churchopoly game. And thirdly, obviously, we need to move around the board. And every time you go around the board, it's the equivalent of a year in the life of a church. So let's choose our character. So what character would you normally play when you play Monopoly at home? Spotted dog, top hat. Right, well, this is Churchopoly, so we're going to play a faceless hipster vicar. I didn't want to put a picture of Sajid now. I thought that'd be really weird. So we're going to do a faceless hipster vicar. We'll put him on the board. Next thing, we need to do our starting income, the money that we've got to start the game with. So now, do we start with £200 or £1,500 in Monopoly? Can you remember? Something different? Any of those? 500? 1,500? 1,500? So this is Churchopoly. So we're going to start with our typical church annual budget income of £182,850. If you've been here the last few weeks, you realise that is our annual income, certainly our income that's projected for this year. So for us, for Churchopoly, that's our income that's largely from us as a congregation in terms of our giving, a little bit that we get from other kind of assets that we have, so a little bit of rental income and a few other things that happen in the life of our church where we get income from. So let's start. So we're going to roll the dice. Ooh. We rolled a four. We move along the board, four, and we land. Where do we land? We land on income tax. But that's Monopoly. We're playing Churchopoly. So we land on our diocesan offer tile. So for those that don't know what a diocesan offer is, this is the best way I can make it slightly interesting. So bear with me. We're going to go through this. It's going to be a little bit, you know, a few minutes. Diocesan offer. So that's as a church that we give to our diocese. And it pays for a number of things for us as a part of our giving to the diocese in terms of our staff and clergy costs. The diocese pay for those people. But it also pays for things like training and other support functions across our kind of community as a diocese and lots of other things as well. So that's the contribution that we make as a church to our diocese. So we'll take that off our income. So we're down to £124,000. So roll the dice again. We roll an eight. Where are we going to go? We are going to land on the electric company. But that's Monopoly. We're playing Churchopoly. So we land on buildings. So this is our buildings costs. So as a church, our building costs quite a bit of money to run our buildings. So here's our church building here at the church. We've got the old vicarage site, a number of buildings on there. And the reality is it costs just over £43,000 for things like heating, lighting, and lots of other things that need to happen in our buildings. So we'll take that off our income for the year. So we're down to £80,000. So we're only about a third of the way through the year. So let's keep going. So let's roll the dice again. Roll a five. Ooh. We land on community chest. But this is Churchopoly. So what we really landed on is our giving. So as a church, we give part of our income away each year to things like our mission partners. So for example, like Lucy, who was mentioning this morning, she was one of our mission partners for a number of years. We have a number of those as well, and not necessarily people who are serving overseas, but also in local kind of communities as well. So things like events that happen in the high street, for example, we've supported that through some of these funds as well. So we'll take that off our income. So let's roll the dice, keep going. Ooh, we're rolling eight. We're over halfway through the year now. Where do we land? On a railway station. But this is Churchopoly. So what we've really landed on is our staff costs. So our staff costs for this year is about £69,000. So one of the, probably the largest part of our budget of what we spend our money on, but also a really important part of what we spend our money on, and actually being able to kind of deliver what we do every day and every week and through the events throughout the year, and actually things like our youth and children's ministry through to our evangelism, through to lots of other things that we do. And that's kind of one of the important parts of our costs that we spend as a church. Now, we can take that off our income. Ooh, we're in the red. Now, this is Churchopoly, so we're not like Monopoly. We suddenly have to start mortgaging and kind of doing deals with other players across the table and hope we get away with it. We're allowed to keep going for the rest of the year because we've got a little bit of money sitting in the savings, but we'll just work with it for now. So we're already £4,000 down. Right, let's roll the dice. Let's see how far we can get through the year because we need to get to the end of the year. We roll nine. Oh, where do we land? Oh, Pennsylvania Avenue. Not really. We land on our day-to-day running costs. So as a church, a lot of our things that we do obviously needs to cost money. So even things like some of the communion stuff that we have to pay for through to evangelism events, to lots of other things that we do, day-to-day running costs, paper in the office, as you can imagine, lots and lots of other things. I'm not going to bore you all the details of it. But again, that takes money. So we're down nearly £15,000 for the year. Now, we're nearly at the end of the year. We've got, I think, six. We need six or more. We get to the next year, we get some more money. Whew, let's see if we can make it. Where do we roll? We roll a four. Not good. What's this going to be? Luxury tax. Well, not really. This is Churchopoly. This is toilets and accessibility projects. So for those of you who haven't been aware, obviously we are finally getting things going, which is wonderful. And brilliantly, a lot of it has already been paid for, or a lot of people have given over the number of years to help get us to the point of being able to get that project off the ground. But the reality is the money that we have saved up for it and have been given for it isn't enough still for the total cost of the project. So we're actually going to be down by a further £20,000. So for the end of the year, we're going to be nearly £35,000 down in terms of what our costs are going to be this year compared to our income this year. So, slightly lighthearted, a little bit being silly, but what does this really mean for us as a church? So there's two things. The reality is our regular income that we have as a church, which I'll be really honest, is mostly us as a body of what we give to the church, isn't going to be enough to cover our expected regular expenditure, what we expect to happen this year in terms of all of our costs, to the tune of nearly £15,000. Secondly, we do have the issue that the toilets and accessibility project is still not, the money that we have got, which is a lot, it still isn't enough for the total cost of the project to the tune of circa £20,000. So the reality is, this year we will be spending pretty much £35,000 more than we would want to or plan to, and that's something that we need to consider. So one of the first questions that's been asked to me is going, well, actually, that's wonderful, but are we going to be bankrupt? Is there something that we need to do? You know, £35,000, that's a lot. You know, what does that really mean to us? Now, the reality is, no, we're not going to go bankrupt as a church. We have been really fortunate over the last few years that we have been able to have slightly more income than our expenditure over the last few years. So we've effectively had a bit of savings and money put aside that kind of allows us to have a buffer, for want of a better phrase. So the reality is we do have some money kind of saved up for those rainy days. But the reality is, as an organisation like a church, it's a bit different to us as individuals and kind of household incomes. I know for my household income, I know pretty much what my salary is going to be each month, and I also know my monthly outgoings are going to be pretty much consistent. And I know that I can balance my kind of monthly expenditure with my income. As a church, it's a bit different. We don't get all our income that regimented in a regular way. We don't have our expenditure regimented in that way either. So the reality is we need to have, you know, a guideline say between 3 or 6 months worth of income or expenditure covered in a kind of a buffer, for want of a better phrase. And it's just the fact of life of running an organization like a business, which is effectively kind of what we are. And that's something that we have to consider. So we do have that kind of money in there. But the reality is, if we didn't try to backfill that cost and that 35,000 and just use that buffer, we would be all right for this year. But next year, we will potentially be in real trouble. next year it will start to really impact us. We might have to make some really quite significant decisions around what that means in terms of our expenditure versus our income, or whether we need to do something drastic. And the reality is, for us, that probably means staffing. So one of the things we've been talking about, money and lots of other things, and this is why we're kind of coming up to this point, is that we are going to be having a gift day on the 10th of June. And basically, the reason why we've kind of been talking about money over the last few weeks is really just to be really honest with you and us as a congregation and as a body, to be really clear about what it takes to run our church family. You know, as we live for Jesus and love Gillingham and learn together, it does cost money. We can't do it for free. But, you know, it's great that we do kind of give to it already. But the reality is we do need a little bit more. So there's two things that we wanted to kind of ask you to consider. So the gift day, I want you to consider whether your regular giving, you may already be giving regularly, and if you are, thank you ever so much on behalf of me as a PCC member and everybody else who's involved in terms of the management of the church. It's really grateful that you do that. Thank you ever so much. And some of you give it in other ways as well, and that's great as well. But we'd just like you to consider that whether your regular giving, maybe you might want to consider changing it. Maybe you want to slightly increase it. Or you might want to start to give regularly for the first time. Please, please come and talk to either Glyn, who's our treasurer. We also have John Beck, who's our gift aid secretary. Now, gift aid, for those that aren't aware of it, basically, in my un-PC terms, it's free money. So effectively, if you are a taxpayer and you wanted to give money to a charity, if that charity is registered with gift aid with HMRC, it means that we can get back the tax equivalent of that donation. Long words, we're trying to make it really simple as possible. Basically, we get a bit of extra money without you having to do anything other than signing a short form in the simplest terms. If you pay tax or you're employed, please talk to John Beck and you want to give regularly. He'll be able to help you do that. And literally, you have to sign one form and that's it. It's done. And we get a little bit more, so thank you so much for that. The other thing is whether you could consider making and the gift a one-off gift towards the shortfall for this year. The reality is, the toilet project is so important, and it's, you know, toilet, it's accessibility project, and it's been the bane of, well, I've been here at St Mark's now nearly 10 years, and it's been talked about since I joined St Mark's, so it's one of those things that's been talked about a lot longer as well, and thankfully we're finally getting going, doing something with it. But the reality is we do need to try and plug that shortfall of what's there. It might be that you might want to be able to consider making a one-off gift. If you can, brilliant. Thank you ever so much. Please consider it. And please don't do it if it's going to put you in financial hardship. That's not what this is about. We're not in a dire situation. This is really just about understanding if you are able to make a contribution and would like to, we'd be really, really grateful. And it just helps us as we kind of go forward into the next few years as well as the church and as we kind of continue to grow. And that is all I'm going to say. Hopefully that is a different way of presenting the figures.